Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Oi, the boys on Footy Prime on occasion are known to use vulgarities and frankly appalling language, and sometimes tales are quite adult in nature. So keep the volume down if there are kiddies around. And thank you for listening.
You're listening to FP Interviews, in-depth conversations with interesting people. Footy Prime, your almost daily footy fix.
It's Tuesday, it is Footy Prime, the podcast, our interview edition. I'm Sean, and we got Jimmy Brennan back here today. B's back as well. Wong is here, he never left. JC is here as well. How's it going, fellas? You good?
Yeah, excited to finally have an interview show. We missed a couple Tuesdays.
We did, yeah. Last week we had interviews planned and they bailed on us, and you were subjected to the five of us doing what we always do, just complete crap. Verbal diarrhea, and I think the listeners lost out. But today we're making up for it. Today we have a comic. He's a writer. He's a podcaster. Boo! Why the hell would you do that? He's an actor. You know him from This Hour is 22 Minutes and CBC. He's also a really, really big fan of our beloved game of footy. It's Trent McLennan. Trent, welcome to Footy Prime, the podcast.
Thanks for having me, and I'm glad to replace verbal diarrhea from last week. That's a pretty high bar.
Well, time will tell. Let's give it a few minutes first.
We'll see if you air this, but that's fine. You know, whatever. We take our chances. We roll those dice.
Yeah, he is an actor. He can pretend that he likes us. You know that, guys.
That's right. Oh, yeah.
Don't get too comfortable here.
I'm taking myself under the table here.
He's coming off a bit like Amber Heard, though. Just so you know, right away, I got thrown in Amber Heard. Bad actor.
We're going to start there? All right.
Yeah, that's where we start.
I did.
That's a line.
It seemed like he wasn't making eye contact with you on the Zoom here. Yeah, I guess.
Where's the jury? Yeah.
First of all, Trent, I'm going to ask you this. Is it comic or comedian? I don't know. And is there like a, is it a thing?
It's fine. I mean, comedians just say he's a comedian, he's a comic. Doesn't really matter. But people, I find to lay people outside the comedy world, they go, comic, like the things, magazines, like you open up the comic. It's like, all right, just comedian, stand-up comedian. So just easier.
Do you come across a lot of those people, though? I feel like those people
I just keep walking. I just keep straightforward. I don't even, you know, when you got to use the bathroom at an airport? You know what I mean? Like you don't stop for the visa sign up. You know, oh yeah, no, this is a great time. You need all my info? Totally. Yeah, I've got time. I just blow straight through.
Hey, I'm that guy with the comic. I thought you meant the comic book. I'm thinking X-Men and everything.
No. Jimmy is a heckler. There's no doubt that he's a heckler, right? If you go to a club, Jimmy, you're the guy, you're the prick in the first row, right? Screaming.
Yeah, we're going to sit right up front, get a picture of highballs and just yell stuff. Awesome. Great. Yeah.
I'm like that with the security as well. I'm going to get chucked out in 10, but just don't beat me up too bad, okay?
Yeah. Whoever the first guy was to throw a vegetable, like, that would have been Jimmy in the 1700s. Yeah. Like, I'm going to throw this cabbage at that comic if I don't laugh.
I want to know how you snuck produce into a show. That's what I want to know. I want to know who's working the door that you brought four cabbages and a turnip, and they went, yeah, you're up front.
It started in theater, I think, in England, right? And you're encouraged to throw stuff at the actors back in those days. So back in those days, they stank anyway, right? So you got a cabbage under your coat. So what? You stink anyway, right?
Yeah,
but that's where it began.
Like I get the cucumbers and all that. I mean, you could stuff those. But a cabbage.
Where would you stuff it, Jimmy?
Where would you put that?
I'm just saying, maybe down the pants, right? But a cabbage or a pumpkin. Sure. Like where are you hiding that?
Yeah, you'll never go to any school plays.
The back of your pants, fun. Jimmy. You the pumpkin goes in the back of your pants.
I don't think you toss too many
Jimmy
pumpkins.
Brennan's here. He's here to watch the play for the. What's going on?
When was the first stand-up? Do you know when did it evolve
when
from
it start?
Theater to yeah to
I
stand-up?
I feel like every time I go up there. That's when it starts. Oh, man, I got to figure this out.
You're inventing the wheel every time.
I'll tell you what, in all honesty, like, you don't worry about that anymore as a stand-up comedian. But, you know, with the whole Chappelle thing and the Chris Rock thing, you know, for a moment I was like, man, is that the new standard? Like, I just don't like what you said. It's time to go up there and punch you in the head. You know, like, that's I was like, crazy. Is that the new thing we're going to? And it's settled down clearly. But I had shows here in Calgary and I was telling folks, I'm wearing a helmet up there and I'm going to be ready to go. Jersey's tied down just in case, you know, but it's been good. I think people want to laugh again. People want to get out and it's been really good. But that for a moment was a little bit dodgy.
I really hope so. But do you think we have lost our sense of humor as a society? Because, you know, yes, cancel culture sucks, right?
Like
you
mentioned. So sensitive.
Yeah, everyone's so sensitive. Now, as a middle-class straight white guy, it's tough for me to, you know, say, well, how can you be offended by anything, right? It's difficult for me to say that. I get that. But have we lost that sense of humor?
I don't know. I think it's interesting. You know, like comedians, there's so many different styles, right? Like you have people who are super clean. You have folks who are edgy. You have folks who are in between. Topics go from anything all over the world. And my motto has always been like, if it's funny, it's funny. Like funny wins. Like Bill Burr always says, he finds it interesting that people will go to a show, they'll watch a show, they're laughing. And then one topic that maybe pushes a button with them, suddenly they're put off like, whoa, whoa, whoa. It's like, no, you were fine with all the other topics I was talking about. But then we hit a trigger with you when we hit your topic and suddenly it was like, they're not jokes anymore. They're statements. The statement that he made. It's like, no, they're all jokes just in line with the rest of them. So I think, you know, we need that release right now. We've had a rough 2 years. Like, you need to be able to go out. And I think it's the truest form of, it's like going to a sporting event. You guys know, like, you're in a crowd of people cheering. You're all in the same moment. Stand-up's the same way. You're in a room. You drop that last word. The whole place erupts. Everybody's on the same page in that time. And I feel like we need that now more than ever. We need that. I almost feel like we hold comedians to a higher standard than we hold politicians. Politicians get away with murder. It's like, that guy's still in office? Like, yeah, I mean, he's apologized and he's going to go to the podium and he's going to hold the baby. But, you know, comedians, it's like somehow we're philosophers now. It's like, no, we're just here to entertain you. I always say to people, do you yell at the screen when you're watching a movie?
Yeah, exactly.
Second. It's like, nah, he's playing a character. He's playing a role. Stand-up's pretty much the same thing.
In fairness, yeah, in Toronto, so there's a few theaters where you probably you'd be hard pressed to find a place where they're not yelling at the screen.
Yeah, exactly. Do people still go to theaters anymore? That's another question.
I watched Ricky Gervais Super Nature this past weekend, right? And he just doesn't give a shit, right? You know, he says, you know, if you're offended, you're choosing to be offended. I mean, it comes to a certain point, I guess, in a career.
And I feel
in his case, he doesn't care, right?
No, and I feel Burr also said that, you know, anything you hear is cut with your own experience. So once it leaves the comedian's mouth and goes into your head, it's cut with your religion, your politics, how you were raised, any trauma you suffered in life. It goes through all that filter for you to process what was just said. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. We all, even though the comedian, we've all heard the same thing, we all process it differently. It all goes in different and shifts around in there. So if your intention is to make somebody laugh, I mean, I've never gone on stage trying to hurt somebody or trying to offend somebody. It's like, but you have to have the freedom to create. That's why now so many comedians are making folks put phones in pouches. You know, when you go to a show, you can't record anymore because they don't want to be a viral clip that you're going to use in some segment and go, oh, what do we think about this? But also you're working on new material. So a lot of this is you're saying it for the first time. You don't even know if it's funny yet because you have to put it out there in the world. That's part of our creative process. So if we can't have a full open creative process, then how do you create in general? It's not like a musician in a studio where you're, you know, banging around and you're like, all right, we got something, let's put it on an album. It's like, it's done in front of a live audience for a comedian. Yeah. So you need that freedom to be able to create.
Change how you workshop. It's like when we go to training, guys, and Jimmy, you know, we just see the 15 minutes of warm-up and then it's, ooh, this big bad secret, they're working on plays. Don't let the media know because they'll tell the other media. And they'll write it, and then we'll be
spoiled.
That's
always such bullshit, AB. It drives me crazy. Like, oh, God forbid we actually, you know, record some tactical genius out there, you know, reinventing the game. What's wrong with you guys, Jimmy? Like, were you that concerned, really? that we might, you know, let the opponents know what's going on?
Well, yeah, because we don't trust you. Simple.
Jimmy was the guy that said, put him on that side.
What it is too, though, you know, even when the starting lineups are coming out, there's a certain period. Mm-hmm. They don't tell the media too much, because, you know, with a game of football as well, one mistake costs you and you end up losing the match. So if you're sitting there watching set plays and you said, oh yeah, they're going to go with a zone defense. I was watching training session and the opposition hears that and then they start working on. So it's just keeping your cards close to your chest and not leaking too much information that could bite you in the ass after that 90 minutes and take away the 3 points. So that's why they try to keep it all quiet. And I know you guys want to get as much information as you can, but it's limited what's going to come out of the dressing room.
For sure. It is funny, though, how like protective it is that we're allowed the first 15 minutes. So you've just come out, literally they're doing yoga, maybe some head tennis. And then the media is pinned to one end while all of this is happening at the other end of the pitch, like, literally as far as possible.
Yeah.
For 15 minutes. Okay, 15 minutes up, go. And all the good stuff's going to happen now.
Get out.
But you know what? It's even if, say, we traveled, we went to Calgary, and on a Friday, we'd have a training session. We wouldn't do set plays there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Just because of the fact that there could be somebody up in the box having a little look and watching our set plays. You're not going to go through your tactical movements and shape because, again, somebody could be watching saying, okay, here's a formation that they're going to do. So everything that you do is behind closed doors.
Have you ever thrown a decoy, Jimmy, where you set up purposely different than you would on the day?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Normally, we sometimes, you know, whether it was at TFC or York, we would you'd start the game in a different formation because they would think that you're going to play a 4-3-3, and then we'd just go, let's line up in a 4-4-2. After 10 minutes, we're changing. We're going back into a 4-3-3. Mm-hmm. So you're trying to confuse the manager because the manager would be looking, going, oh, fuck, we didn't prepare for this. Right. We're playing a 4-4-2. So then they're trying to adjust as well. It's just trying to get a little edge or mess with their heads, really.
Some head games, yeah.
It's like Trent starting a stand-up routine with the political jokes, you know, rather than the sexual jokes, you know, and then you change it up.
You go up and you don't face the audience to start. You know what I mean? Like, he does it the whole time. Do we go up? Do we go up behind and do we go on the stage so we can face him? How does it keep him on their toes? You know what I mean?
The Poznan in the crowd, right?
Trent, I got a question for you. When you get up on stage, like, I can only imagine the rush that you get and how nervous you would be being solo, just staring at all these people.
Yeah.
And have you ever had your first joke and you went, oh my God, they're not laughing, I'm in trouble here?
Oh, I'll tell you, you're going to love this story. So Jerry D is a good buddy of mine, right?
Yeah.
So we were doing a show here in Calgary, and I was about 6-7 years into it. And it's a big deal. I'm opening for him. We're at the Jack Singer Concert Hall. It's 2,500 people, sold out. So I'd opened for him a bunch of times on the tour, and all the shows had gone well. My material's working. So I go out to open the show. People are going crazy. I do my first joke. Nothing. 2,500 people. Mm. It is, you could hear people's eyelids coming together as they blink. And as a comic, you're right. You're like, whoa, like, is my fly down? Am I, what happened? You do the second joke. Nothing. So now I'm like, man, I don't know. Is this mic working? It's the old classic. I'm sitting in my mind. I'm thinking this stuff. And start the third joke. And then all of a sudden I just feel somebody grab me and I turn around and look, and it's Jerry. And he'd gone out and told the entire audience not to laugh at anything I said. Oh, dude,
that's amazing.
Son of a bitch. Because you get in your own head. You're like, oh, man, am I, what is going on? Not today, not Calgary. I got people here. You know what I mean?
Like, oh, man.
But it's funny. I always tell new comedians, like, you want to start with your best stuff. You know, it's like when I played, it's like you want to make the first pass. You want to get the first tackle in. You want to establish yourself early. And you start with your strongest stuff generally. But, I mean, now many years doing it, you could talk about, you know, your travel day today, or it's not necessarily something you've rehearsed. It's just something in the moment that you kind of ease into your stuff as you go. But I treat it like I did when I played. Like, I was thinking about today, like, you know, you get to the pitch early and you'd walk around and see what the surface is like. And I played left wing a lot. So it's like, what does it look like visually? And like, what's the depth and how long, you know? I do the same thing as a stand-up. I get to the stage. I want to get there early before the crowd gets there. I want to get on the stage, see how wide it is, how long it is, what the lighting's going to be like. Like, I want all that familiarity before I get up there. And so then on the, when it's time, it's like you just go up and you feel like you're somewhat home already, you know, because so I still use some of the same things I used when I played, you know.
Do you still sense, like when you play football, do you still sense straight away the energy of the audience, whether they're going to be a good one or a bad one? And do you feed off that?
Yeah, yeah. Because you, I feel like I tell the audience all the time, we're judging you just as much as you're judging us. You know, like I watch people walk in at a comedy club and you're like, oh, that table's drunk. Oh, no. Is that a stag at? Oh, Jesus. Oh, Christ. They're going to want attention. You know, it's always, they're always thinking that stuff. So, and you know, when there's a buzz in the room, when they're really, really excited, you're like, oh, this is going to be awesome. If it's really dead and no one's really chatting at all, it's kind of dull. You're like, oh, it's going to be uphill tonight. So you're always judging those things and taking in that data, I think, even. But I think it's the same thing you did when you played soccer. You know, it's like, what do we got here today? What cards are stacked against us? You know,
I don't know if you know, Trent, but you're actually in the presence of Canadian football, university football greatness, of the Vanier Cup variety. Producer Dan Wong has a Vanier Cup ring that he tells us about quite often.
Most shows, actually.
Do you break that out at parties? Is that the
no, I, yeah, all right. But I, unfortunately, I put it on my penis.
It's in the case. I'm going to get it. Fellas, don't leave. Fellas. Oh,
it's down there. It around my, it's my cock ring.
it's down there with the cucumber.
That's right. And the potato at the back.
Honey, did you make a salad? Oh, my ring was on the...
I'm getting ready for jail, Trent. I'm getting ready for jail.
What is that?
How the hell did that fit on there? It's tiny.
I'm sorry. So I was going to, what are the things?
The size of the cucumber you used?
It was a pickle.
You better be taking this one to CIS because that's where I was going.
It's close. But one of the things I was going to talk about, sorry, B, is or ask Jimmy, Dicchio, and Craig, we always talk about the worst places to play.
Right.
And Millwall seems to be the EPL version of where. Where's your worst place to play? And it doesn't have to be it can just be, hey, the crowd was shit. I don't want to throw you, under the bus. But where did you have a horrible experience?
You can say Regina. It's fine.
Regina was usually pretty good because they just were. The thing about Regina would be at this gig we used to do at I think it was called Parktown Hotel or something. And it was, they would serve pitchers of highballs, like rum and coke in a pitcher and vodka 7 in a pitcher. And the show would start at like 9:30 and the doors would open at 7. So no. I'm the last on. So by the time I get on, these guys are marinated. These people are absolutely liquidated. They're just totally like they've been pounding highballs pitchers. Like just so you're like, oh, I got to get these guys early or this is a dogfight, right? But my favorite story to tell about awkward shows is I got asked to do a housewarming once. And I'd already had a gig that night. I didn't need to do the housewarming, but my agent's like, oh, it'll be good. They're really excited. It'll be fun. If you want to do it, the money's not too bad. I go, okay. So I contact the guy who's having the housewarming and he says, yeah, it's going to be a surprise. So no one knows you're coming. And I'm like 3 years into stand-up. No one knows who I am. I'm just a comic, you know? And so I show up at this guy's house. He goes, yeah, I text him. I go, I'm here. Yeah, I'm here. He goes, go around to the back door. So I go to the back door. He opens. He goes, all right, no one knows you're going to be here. So I'm going to put you in the bathroom. And then I'm going to come down and get you out of the bathroom in about 15 minutes. And as I'm saying this, I understand it's insane. But this is a young comedian trying to make his way here. So I'm just standing in this guy's shitter, just looking around at his meds and just whatever. I'm like, what am I doing here? Why am I in a strange man's bathroom on a Friday night? So anyway, 15 minutes later, he comes down. He goes, okay, we're ready. Let's go. So he walks me down to their kitchen living room area. And it's just 10 folks sitting around an island drinking wine, eating cheese. And then I just come out of the bathroom in my sock feet. Hey, guys. I was at the mall the other day. You guys like Burger King? And I'm just – and they're like, what the fuck is he? How long has that guy been in the shitter? Who is he? They are in shock, and it's not till that moment I saw their faces. Like, oh fuck, they don't know what's happening. They're just like a 6'3" black man just walk out of the shitter down the hall.
Yeah, with no flush.
The Burger King.
No introduction. Nothing. Just
what's happening? And they've got a dog. The dog is sniffing me. I'm trying to push the dog away. I'm like, why am I here? And the thing about stand-up is, like, when you watch a Just for Laughs set or a Halifax Comedy Fest set or whatever, like, if you have to do 7 minutes, the 7 minutes means the material plus the laughter. That's the full 7 minutes. It's not 7 minutes of material. So you have to time this out to know what 7 minutes is, because it might actually be 5 minutes, but with laughter, it's seven. So I had like 30 minutes of material that I'm supposed to do. But you know what, fellas? It's hard to get an applause break from 10 people sitting at an island drinking wine, eating cheese. Like, who the fuck is that? So the stuff is just rolling past them, the material. So these 30 minutes I had shrunk down to about 5 minutes, and now I'm doing my closer at 5 minutes. Like, all right, thanks. And I just walk down the hall to put my shoes on, and the guy who hired me is standing over me. He goes, yeah, what you guys do is pretty tough.
And then Jerry D came out.
Yeah. It felt like a one night stand. Like, you're gonna call me, right? You're gonna I'll show myself.
That's tough.
It was the worst. I drove home. I was like, I gotta shower. I just gotta get to wash this off me. That's the ones you do when you're starting out, where you're like, man, you know, but it does make you tougher, because then when you get to a comedy club or a real show, you're like, nothing will ever be as tough as a green room being another man's bathroom.
No kidding. That's rock bottom almost, right, as a comedian.
One of the questions that I had written up was, who do you think has more horror stories from the road, comedians or Canadians that have played in CONCACAF?
Oh, that's a great question. I don't know. I mean, I've heard the stories, right? Like, I've talked to the guys, you know, and D-Row and stuff too, and talked about, you know, the bags of piss and the hotel situation and stuff. But you know what the similarity is? No one gives a shit, right? Like, Jimmy, like, when you showed up to play, no one cares what happened before game time and your travel situation and the fact that the food was shit. Like, they just want the performance at 4 o'clock. And stand-up was the same thing. Like, don't care you didn't sleep. Don't care you got the flu. Don't care that you know, your stomach's not feeling great. It's like, we paid our money. Make me laugh at 8 o'clock. So it's like, you have to develop that callus of just, like, going, forget about what happened during the day, or take it on stage with you and make it funny. But it was like, you have to do the business. I always say to people, that's the difference between being a pro and an amateur. An amateur is going to do it when they're in the mood to do it. You're feeling it. The environment's set up for you to succeed. Do it when it's stacked against you. Do it when you're throwing bags of piss, and do it when you didn't sleep, and do it when the microphone is shit, and do it when that's when you earn your chops, I think. So I think there's a lot of similarities, sadly.
I imagine also it's that ability to shake off a joke that doesn't hit, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's much like at football, you have a, you know, you miss a sitter or whatever, and shake it off. That the veterans can do that. But it takes a while to get to that point, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I think even when I joined 22 Minutes, you know, 6 years ago, like, Mark Critch is a good friend of mine and castmate, and Mark had great advice for me. He's like, you know, if we have a good show last week, or you had a good week for yourself personally, it's irrelevant, because we're already on to the next week. If you had a bad week, it's irrelevant. So it's just like an athlete, you know, like, you don't get to hang your hat on the fact you had a great game on a Saturday. It's like, okay, we go again in 2 or 3 days' time. Or we, like, there's no patting yourself on the back. But also, you also can't get too low about a bad set or a bad game. It's like, you have to kind of find that even keel to just keep going. But when I started, it was hard, because the swings were so dramatic. You know, like, you'd have a great set and you're like, oh, I'm the greatest comedian in the world. And then you'd eat your shit. You're like, oh, Jesus, I should be an accountant. Do you know what I mean? Like, you just, the swings were so drastic. Yeah. So it's about just staying even keeled, learning, taking data in from everything that happens too. Like, if you had a rough night, why did you have a rough night? Like, what was it about that? How did you start the set? How did you finish it? Did you lose confidence at some point up there? Were you nervous? Whatever it is, you can always take data from it. And so I try and use those same principles.
Interesting, man. This hour has 22 minutes. You're going to season 30, right? This has been running for 30 years. Great political satire. Did you find that the last few years, like the Trump era, you've been on for 6 seasons, as you said, like, was it harder because what was happening in real life was so unbelievable? And normally that would be funny. It must have been harder, I feel like, to cover politics and try and make it funny in that style.
Yeah, because he's already a joke, right? Like, it's like, you know, you can't make fun of someone who's already at that level. You're like, you're already a satire of politicians. Like, you're already doing that as he is. So for us, it was, Mark did a great impression of him, so it worked out really well for us. But the other thing we had to deal with was the saturation of Trump, right? Because he was everywhere all the time. And because our show comes on Tuesdays, if something happened in the news on a Friday, how many people have already beat the shit out of that premise and topic by the time we air on a Tuesday night? So you always have to kind of think, well, what's the most current thing we can do? Or is our angle unique in comparison to what Kimmel's doing or SNL is doing or whatever? You always have to be aware of what your competition's doing too. So it made it difficult at times, but we did get some good material out of it. But it was such a unique time, you know, with that whole thing, because you're like, that, what is he going to do next? And like, oh, he did not, that's not real. That's fake, right? No, that is actually real. So it always kept us on our toes.
What is your process for writing jokes? I've always wondered this, you know. I mean, obviously different comics have different processes, but like, do you have a little notepad that you put your long-term ideas in, you're working them over the course of weeks and months or even years maybe. And then sometimes boom, middle of the night, great line comes to you and you work from there.
I sit down, I try to sit down at least an hour a day and go, okay, like what frustrated me?
We do the same before podcasts.
Yeah. Well, that guy in traffic today, why did he do that? Why that's going in? I say it to my lady all the time. I go, that goes in the act. That's going in the act. She's like, okay, great, good. I think anything that frustrates you, like, comedy comes from pain and stuff not working out. No one wants to hear about how great your life is, right? People want to hear about like how shit didn't work out and what your possible solutions are to fix it. So that's how I look at it. That's the great thing about phones now too, because you can just quickly jot, you know, an idea down real quick or do a voice memo to yourself about what you want to do. But at the end of the day too, James, it's like you don't know until you get up there in front of an audience. Like, I won't know. This is funny to me, and I might bounce it off you. You might go, yeah, that's pretty funny, but you and I are buddies. We're hanging out all day, and so we get it. We were there. But to take it in front of strangers at 8 o'clock who don't know you very well, who weren't there in the moment, will work with them, and you will not know until you get on stage. That's why people always say you can't just be funny on your couch if you're a comedian. You have to get up in front of a live audience and see if it works. And but I still love that. I still love trying to figure out why a joke doesn't work. Like, I love that topic. Why does not work? Fix it, tweak it, you know, keep the meat away while I'm doing a joke. And just tweak it, and then take it back on stage and go, God, it works now. And you're right, some jokes take years. You're like, I believe that topic for some reason it won't work. But then you write another chunk, and suddenly that went forward. So, but I love that process, the offstage trying to create and generate stuff and come up with new material. I love that.
Have you ever had the perfect show where every joke hit and you came up thinking, man, that was what it's all about?
Every night, Dave. Well, I mean, what's the other alternative? I'd say with the shit one. You raise an eyebrow and they're like, oh my God, like you have in the palm of your hand. Mm-hmm. And I was talking about this with a friend the other night. It's like riding a wave and you're like, oh shit, I'm almost to the beach. I just gotta hold it. Just don't misstep. And you feel that when you're on stage sometimes, that it's just like there's a magical night. There's something in the room that just is above normal tonight. But because you're a comedian and you're self-deprecating in your mind, you're thinking, that audience was too easy. There's no way I'm that funny. Yeah. So you're always beating the shit out of yourself at the same time. But those are special nights, you know, like where you just feel everything goes. They're with you from the get-go. And that's why you love doing it.
You're a big sports guy, obviously. You played at Memorial, so you've played competitive at a high level. Which is the easiest sport, though, to work into comedy? And which sports fans are the most sensitive, do you think?
Oh, wow.
Because even in what we do, it's like, huh, I can take some shots at Arsenal here, but there's a threshold where then it becomes, I'm getting hate tweets for months. I can't go to Newcastle anymore because I made one joke like on Twitter.
Wasn't it Palace for you, B? Isn't it Palace fans hate you?
There's one Palace fan who's a twat, but yes, okay. Newcastle's the new hate. They hate me.
Why is that?
A lot of Geordie hate.
Because the bone saw jokes?
No, I made some tweet. No, I made some comparison to them, you know, believing that they were going to sign Messi. What I did, I thought I was being clever, and it was, I wasn't actually taking a shot at Newcastle fans, but I had taken just Googled sad Newcastle fan, happy Newcastle fan. And I put this contrasting, you know, like reality versus expectation type tweet. And one of the fans in the photo like replied, and then I must have had 1,000 replies. And it was good for the impressions, Wonger. It was one of those good stat days. But yes, a lot of hate in Newcastle.
So we're not doing that guy's trip to Newcastle late. I've said what you're saying.
Okay. Yeah, oh, no, we are. We're going.
All the more reason to now.
Yeah. You put your shirt on him with Dunlop written on the back and just throwing him out. Yeah.
And B, I would direct you to keep tweeting stuff like that if it's good for impressions. You could be the most hated guy at our podcast. It would be perfect.
Oh, that's pretty amazing. Close to it. In terms of your question, I like to beat up on baseball, right? Because I just think anybody could play baseball. I think here's a topic. I think of all the pro sports, if you took soccer, basketball, hockey, baseball, take something else. I think all those athletes could learn to play baseball quicker than a baseball player could learn to do the other sports. I believe that.
I like that.
Yeah. I don't think a baseball player would quickly fit into the NBA or in the NHL or go into the Premier League or CPL, MLS, whatever. I just don't think they'd transition. They're not even in shape.
Yeah, they would have a hard time on the bench eating.
That guy's eating while he's playing. That's not an athlete. Is that guy chewing tobacco? I paid money to watch this. Can't be here. I'm not going to be here. So I love beating up on baseball.
Surely there's an issue as well when you swing a bat and your belt pops. There's got to be a point where you say, okay, I got to stop this eating.
Do they even have a nutritionist, Jimmy? Do they even have a guy who's like, guys, all right, we're going to do – the hot dogs are going to be protein, all protein dogs. They had to draw lines to show them where to run, for Christ's sake. It's first base. You've been doing it since you've been nine. Just run – Hey, I'd like a guide.
I agree, and I think any sport where the manager wears the same outfit as the players,
that is ridiculous, right? There's an age limit where you shouldn't be wearing those anymore. Right.
Imagine Steve Kerr with his Golden State jersey on, short socks.
Well, imagine Daryl Sutter at a Flames game, full helmet, just standing on the
back. Wasn't it Sparky Anderson, the old geezer for Detroit B? Sparky Anderson was about 85 years old and still trotting out in those baggy pants. Oh, he looked ridiculous.
What are we doing?
That was great.
What? And they play out 4,000 games a year. I mean, is it? Anything you can play twice in a day, double headers. Can you imagine the NBA like LeBron? You're playing 2 o'clock and we got you again at 7. Now, today, you're playing again today. Get some tobacco, chew it up, get out there. So that's the one I beat up on. Hockey's obviously fun because there's so many, like just the way they talk and communicate. And like, you know, obviously we got to be better and we know that, right? And so obviously, right? Like, you know, it's one of those things where you got to have a good shift and get pucks in deep. And I mean, obviously a lot of character in this room, right? So, I mean, like all that stuff is just it's just easy, low hanging fruit, you know? So, but I don't find fans either way of any sport, but that's the same thing I told you about Burr earlier with topics. People would be crying, laughing at everything. And then you might hit on baseball and they're like, actually it's like, oh, we hit your sore spot there. Sorry about that. So, people get sensitive about their own topic.
Yeah, so sports that are just cemented in tradition, right? They can't break out. Your buddy Jerry D, I remember back in the Score days, he'd do his Jerry D Sports Reporter bit, and it was just amazing. And if I remember that the hockey players didn't quite know how to take him compared to other sports. The guys with personalities in other sports loved it. The NBA guys were all over it, I remember. But the hockey guys weren't quite sure. Who is this guy? Is he being serious? Like, lack of sense of humor in hockey, for sure.
I love it. I loved it when you did that.
Well, the beauty of that bit too, like Jimmy, you know too, like it's so alpha, right? Like people are like, I'm used to you knowing who I am, you know, in sports. So for Jerry to come in and go, I actually don't know who you are. I got sent out by my work. And who are you? And making them introduce themselves.
That's amazing.
It was amazing. It was like kind of so you're right. They'd be on the back foot. Like, who the fuck's this guy? Like, how did he get in here? How did he get press credentials? But there's a beauty to that, I think.
Now, you mentioned you played, obviously, B mentioned CAS, East Coast Soccer. How big is the sport out there these days? I mean, we always hear about, you know, CPL's expanding, Halifax is a team now, Stephen Hart's kind of revered out there in those circles. Yep. But how is the sport out there?
It's great. Like in Newfoundland and Labrador, there's so many kids playing. Like it's surpassed hockey. It's like kids are playing all the time. There's more money in the game now too. When I played, of course, there was, you know, facilities were pretty minimal and you you were doing the best you can. But, you know, Nationals, when they'd have Challenge Cup stuff there, like 5,000 people coming out to watch semifinals and finals, like people are really, really jacked up for it. And I was talking to someone the other day about it. Actually, I'd love to see, a CPL team go to St. John's. I think it would work really, really well. I know there's financial things and logistics and all that stuff, but I feel like that city and that province would really get behind it. As you guys know, Canada's last time qualifying for the World Cup. Where did they clinch it before this last time? St. John's, Newfoundland, King George V Park. Place was on wheels. People love it. And they do feel a little bit isolated and kind of left out of the conversation quite often, you know? So it's alive and well there. And teams are doing a lot better on a national level. I think the level of training has gone up and kids are going away to academies and different things. So it's quite popular. And I'd love to see a CPL team there. Can you imagine Halifax, St. John's rivalry? Oh, kitchen party off, whatever.
It'd be amazing. I think that would actually be the longest derby or the largest trip in the world if St. John's had a team to go to Victoria, because Halifax to Victoria is the second longest.
Right.
Some two teams in Russia that are farther away.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
It would be amazing. Special. Yeah.
Yeah.
Does Newfoundland lead the league in funny people? Like, I feel like a lot of our Canadian comedians or just our actors, like there's a lot of Newfoundlanders that are really funny.
I think it's just it's a storytelling culture, right? Like the economy has been so beat up over the years and the weather can be shit a lot of times. So all you had was just, you better make light of it. You better find something to laugh at, because is that fog again today for the 10th day? Yep. Let me tell you a story. Like what else are you going to do? And I think the great thing about people from Newfoundland and Labrador too is that we don't take ourselves too seriously. So we sure as shit don't take anybody else too seriously. And I think you need that in comedy. You know, you need that, like, I don't want to put you up on a pedestal too much. Like, even like when I go home now, people are very quick to remind me of, like, don't forget, okay, where you came from. Okay. You understand? You had a big deal around here. You had a big deal. No one cares. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Self-deprecation, right?
I remember you. Okay. Yeah.
It's such a beautiful place, though. I went out to go visit our friend, Dan. Yeah. I stayed out there for about 3-4 days. And was it George Street, right?
Yep.
And it was just packed with bars, people just jamming, singing. And it was the most welcoming place I've ever been in my life. The people were so friendly. The banter is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Everybody's always having a laugh. It is such a cool place. Honest to God, if you can get out there, you've got to go experience it. And you almost feel like you're back in Ireland or you're in Scotland or England. It's amazing. What a place.
Yeah, it's a cool place. And I think people want you to have a good time too when you come to visit. They want to show you around. It's like, Jan Arden tells a classic story about how she got a cab downtown in St. John's once from her hotel to downtown. And she realized the cab driver hadn't put the meter on. So she's driving and she's seeing all these beautiful buildings and stuff. They get to where she's going downtown. And she's like to the cab driver, you didn't turn the meter on. What do I owe you? And he goes, I had to go this way anyway. Don't worry about it. So she just, it's laid back.
You can get into it so much with you boys.
Yeah. It's just a very chill, laid back place. But I think they do get fired up about sports and hockey and soccer and stuff. And I think it would do really, really well there. I think the city would get behind it. I mean, I've been to games at Wanderers Grounds and I love that pub culture as well, of like everyone hitting the pub first and they've got the scarves on and they got the flags going. Everyone goes for a few pints and a meal or whatever. And then they all just kind of march up to the ground. And it's like, you could do the same thing at King George and St. John's and it would be on wheels.
Hey, Trent, I've got just before I cut out, just cause I'm seeing my internet being weird. I've got two questions for you, maybe three. In your bathroom story. In your bathroom story.
Yes.
Was there any mention of GIMP and a ball gag? That's number one.
What? I like how that was your first question.
Just as I was about to talk about cavalry, this is where we're going.
I found a question often tells way more about the person who asked that question.
Number two, what city was it? Did you mention the city?
It was Calgary, yeah.
It was Calgary. And the last one is, what's this guy's address and number?
This guy's address will be on my Twitter afterwards. You guys can pop by there. He's doing a festival this year. It's called the Shitter Festival. And you could all perform at the actual. The answer to your first question was no. Thanks for that. And
was it Daryl Sutter?
You could have asked anything. Did he have preparation H? You went with ball gag. Wow.
Yep. Dan's going back to his cellar in a minute.
Yeah, exactly. I just thought of Pulp Fiction. I just literally thought of Pulp Fiction.
That ankle bracelet you have on, is that you have to stay in a certain geographic?
There's a reason why it's via Zoom. It's because Dan can't leave his house.
Yeah, right. Hours I think we know where he's going before my internet cuts out. You mean back to the old? Yeah, okay.
Down the well. Yeah, exactly.
With the lotion.
You had a question there about cavalry, B?
Yeah, no, just that. Wonger's timing is just so beautiful. I love Wonger's timing with that. Yeah,
I like how you had it written. He had him written down too. Like, I don't want to forget these. These are,
it's the follow-up. It's the mid-interview follow-up.
They love the ball gag joke.
Was there a ball gag? No?
Okay, thank you. Is your season ticket holder for cavalry out there, Spruce Meadows? And you were just describing the match day in Halifax. Is your Spruce Meadows match day the same?
Oh,
is
it's insane.
Same atmosphere?
Yeah, it's amazing. It's so cool. I mean, I don't know if you guys have all been, but it's that game day experience when they open up the grounds and they have all the kiosks going and the food going and bands playing. And it's a full day, right? Like, you can go there hours early, have some drinks, sit out in the sun. And it's I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe how amazing my first time there, but the whole game day experience. Kids are wearing jerseys. And there was nothing there. I mean, Spruce Meadows has always been there, clearly, but this stadium, ATCO Field, didn't exist a couple of years ago. Like, they built a grandstand where the pitch is now. Used to be a big fountain where horses used to just jump and stuff around it. And I remember in 2019, it was the Canadian Championships. Whitecaps were in town. Place is packed. Like, it is just loud. It's crazy. And Tommy Wheeldon's a good friend of mine, as you know. And I'm sitting there in the stands, and as the teams walk out, and I go, they did it. They fucking did it. There was nothing here a year ago. The Whitecaps are walking out, and we got a chance to. It was just a surreal moment to just be a part of that. You can build something from nothing. And you know, I'm a big soccer fan, so I was watching, you know, Foothills playing the PDL, you know, like a couple of years prior, and see like the progression of Tommy in general, but also the club and the core they took to go into Calvary FC. I was like, they've built this. They've built this from nothing, you know, and to go there and see the foot soldiers going nuts and the flares and the flags. And like I said, kids wearing stuff and the hats and jerseys. It's like, it's a cool, cool thing. And I'm a Man United fan. So like, I've had shit to cheer about over the last bunch of years. So like, to have an actual club in your city now that you could actually get behind and they're doing their thing and they play good stuff. I was like, man, this is heaven. Beers, sunshine, your club's good. Come on.
And there's more chance. Let's go. There's more chance to see Calgary win trophies this year than United as well. So that's positive.
Say that again.
That's actually quite accurate, James. Quite accurate. I'm just tired of that shit show with United. It's just like, what are we doing? Like, just
I know.
To the ground and let's start over. You know. So
are you? I'm going to ask you, because B's. Are you a pro Ronaldo at United guy? Are you? It's time to leave Ronaldo. Should never come back.
I think
Ronaldo
it's time to go. I think that was a. I think that was a safety move, if I'm honest. It was a life raft at a time when that ship was sinking. And it was like, well, we're bringing this guy back, huh? You like this guy? Remember this guy when he was younger? And don't get me wrong. Love that he puts the ball in the net. He'll always be a star. He'll always be a legend. But, you know, the guy's, what, 36 years old? It's like, is he the future of Man United? No. So if you can get something for him, and if he wants to go, I'm all about moving him. You know, it's like, okay. get some money for him, and let's rebuild. I think – holding on to the glory days. And I, you know, I have coaches to tell me this too. Like, you know, that jersey doesn't win you games. It's like, you got to show up on the day. You got to do the business, got to be prepared. I think there's way too much of holding on to the glory days and the class of 92. It's like, these players have to build their own legacy, and they have to go forward and fight their own battles and get off social media and worrying about all that other shit and go and do the business and win games. And you don't do that by looking backward. You do that by showing up in the day, do the business, and you build your own legacy. And I think Ronaldo has his legacy. It's like, it's time to move on and let's go forward and let someone else create their own.
I heard you speak about your first soccer coach. His name was Doug Sweetapple.
Yeah.
Have you used that name as a character in anything? Because I think that's a phenomenal name.
It's a good idea. Doug Sweetapple. Yeah, that guy was like, I think every place has that person that's their everything soccer coach, you know, who just like was picking players up and bringing them to practice and like driving kids on trips middle of nowhere to these tournaments while he had his own family. But it was just, he went above and beyond. And they just recently named a soccer pitch after him, the pitch where I played when I was growing up and stuff. And I go, yeah, why don't we do this stuff while people are alive? Why do we have to wait until they pass on and go, here's this pitch in memoriam? It's like, no, 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 he's alive. He would see it. He could be here for the ceremony. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So they did it, which I think was long overdue. And yeah, he was a big part of my life, just about, you know, the work ethic and like showing up every day, and you fail and you lose and you get up again the next day and you go again. It's like, those are invaluable lessons to me as a young person. So I owe him a lot.
Yeah, the people that lay the foundation for the sport in this country, you know, you mentioned Tommy before as well, you know, what he's done for the game in this country, the ambassador he's been. I think we're in pretty good shape in many regards. Trent, listen, this has been a lot of fun. Thanks so much for doing this. It's been great.
I mean, I've done a lot of big things in my life, and I got to say, this is nowhere near that, but this is still, this was up there. This was, you know, the shitter one. She's just above that. And it, which is good. I mean, you don't want to be below that one.
And we have a bull gag here as well.
So. Yeah, we just do. The fact that you used the term shitter. I know exactly where you're from, brother. Exactly.
Oh, God. If you have any more great questions, Dan, write them down.
Oh, and, yeah, that's Trent McClellan part two.
Yeah, exactly.
Email
next
me,
quarter.
I'll get back to you. Yeah, that was great.
Trent V. Dan part two. That'd be all right. Yeah, enjoy that.
It was great, man. I appreciate you guys having me on, and all the best with the podcast, man. It's fun to listen to it, too. So keep going.
Thanks so much. That's Trent McClellan. Okay. And this has been Footy Prime, the podcast. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. We're back on, what are we, Wednesday today? Tuesday? Back tomorrow night, I guess, right? Yeah? Is today Tuesday?
Today's Tuesday. The holiday throws you off, eh?
It always throws me off. Yeah, this one confuses me. Holidays, so yeah, we're back tomorrow night.
Holidays are for other people, not for people that work in media or sports.
Yeah, no kidding.
Like this 15 years, it's just a giant inconvenience all the time. I try to go to the grocery store on Friday because I forgot.
Idiot.
Friday night, you're spending your night in the grocery store.
No, it was the afternoon. Didn't know why it was closed.
Either sounds way, like quite the July the 1st. Had a boy. Well, listen, everyone, thanks so much. We're back tomorrow. That's Wednesday. Subscribe, like us, and please keep buying newspapers. Cheers for listening.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.